From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippines, Manila, I greet you all, time zone to time zone, all 24 of them, or however many there are, morning, noon, nighttime, whatever it is where you are, doesn't matter, here's where I am. I'm Art Bell, and this, of course, is the biggest, the most interesting program of its kind on the face of the planet. It's called Coast to Coast AM. Great to be here. My honor and privilege to be escorting you throughout the weekend. John Mark Carr, the suspect in the killing of six-year-old JonBenet Ramsey, arrived late Sunday after a 15-hour flight from Thailand on which he sipped champagne. Get this, dined on fried king prawns and roast duck. Oh my gosh, and exchanged what he described as small talk with law enforcement escorts. Carr voluntarily returned to the U.S., was not handcuffed in his business class seat, was expected to be extradited by Los Angeles authorities, pending a hearing on extradition then to Boulder, Colorado, where authorities have indeed issued an arrest warrant for him. Lebanon's defense minister said Sunday that he is certain Hezbollah will not break the ceasefire, but he warned all militant groups of harsh measures and a traitor's fate should they incite Israeli retribution by firing rockets into the Jewish state. So in other words, don't start it again. A Missouri man who police say confessed to killing, dismembering, and then burning the bodies of seven men in his bedroom fireplace. You know, these kinds of stories. Seven men in his bedroom fireplace was charged Sunday with one count of murder. Michael Lee Shaver Jr., 33, charged with first-degree murder and armed criminal action related to a killing around fall of 2001. Shaver, who police say spontaneously confessed after he was arrested following a failed carjacking, told investigators he had shot and then killed seven people at his residence during drug transactions so he could take their money and their drugs. Boy. Senator Joe Lieberman, attacked by fellow Democrats as being too close to the White House on the Iraq War, on Sunday called on Defense Secretary Rumsfeld to resign, said the U.S. cannot simply walk away from the Iraqis. Isn't the world news wonderful? Or this, from Texas. Three police officers and a state trooper were shot and wounded Sunday afternoon, and the alleged gunman died of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound, ending a standoff that lasted more than 8 hours, according to police there. Police said the siege began when the officers were called to an apartment complex because of a report of a broken window. Looking at it, they figured out it was had been shot out. They went to the apartment. Gunfire appeared to come from the apartment. Somebody began opening fire on them. Always a bad idea with regard to the police. And so He's now gone. More rain on the way to flooded Alaska. It's bad in Alaska. It's going to get worse. More rain on the way. Trilby Lundberg. You may have heard that name. Not Trilby, but Lundberg, the nation's guru of gasoline prices, has no idea how many miles her new Mercedes-Benz, a Mercedes-Benz at that, gets per gallon when she fills her tank, but she's more concerned with convenience and price. Yet for decades, the nation has turned to the assertive 57-year-old cat lover, bless her heart, and her twice-monthly Lundberg survey of gas stations to keep track of the fluctuating price of gasoline. Lately, of course, the news has not been good, nor is much of any of the national news. In a moment, we'll look at the rest of the news.
This hour, Coast to Coast AM is brought to you by Denny's. If you're out late and want real food, forget the drive-thru. Swing by Denny's for their new Extreme Grand Slam.
Thank you. I think it is so appropriate that somebody, a chain like Denny's would sponsor the first hour of the show here on the weekends, all night, available all night long, just as this program is. You know, I also want to take a second out, just before I plunge away here, and thank the Nevada Broadcasters Association that last night inducted me into their Hall of Fame. Makes one feel old. I am old. Nevertheless, it is a great honor, and thank you very much. Now, for the amateur radio operators out there, the aficionados of shortwave, and those who watch the sun, on July 31st, it may not seem like much, a little tiny sunspot was born. Not that sunspots actually get born, but it's just a word. It popped up from the sun's interior, floated around a little bit, then vanished again in just a few hours on the sun. This sort of thing happens all the time, and ordinarily, well, it just wouldn't even be worth mentioning. But this sunspot was rather special. It was an absolutely backwards sunspot. Now, that really is important. According to David Hathaway, he said, "We've been waiting for this." A solar physicist at the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, said a backward sunspot is a sign the next solar cycle is beginning. The tiny backward sunspot of July 31st, backward means magnetically backward. Sunspots are planet-sized magnets created by the sun's inner magnetic dynamo. Like all magnets in the universe, sunspots are north and south magnetic poles. They have them both. The sunspot of July 31st popped up at solar latitude 65 west, 13 south. Sunspots in that area are normally oriented north-south. The newcomer, however, was oriented south-north, opposite of the norm. The tiny spot of backwardsness matters because of what it might foretell, a really big solar cycle. Now, that's something we've been hoping for, ham radio operators. Solar activity rises and falls, of course, an 11-year cycle, swinging back and forth between times of quiet and, well, great storminess. Right now, the sun is very quiet. We're near the end of solar cycle 23. That peaked back in 2001. Next cycle 24 should begin any time now, returning the sun to a very stormy state. Satellite operators and NASA mission planners are bracing for this next solar cycle because it's expected to be exceptionally stormy. Perhaps, get this, the stormiest in decades. Sunspots and solar flares will return in abundance, producing bright auroras on Earth and dangerous proton storms in space. But when will 24 begin? Says Hathaway, maybe it just did. The first spot of a new solar cycle is always backwards. Solar physicists have long known that sunspot magnetic fields reverse polarity from cycle to cycle. North-south becomes south-north and vice versa. The backward sunspot may be the first sunspot of cycle 24. It sounds exciting, but there are cautions. First, the sunspot lasted only 3 hours. Typically, sunspots last days, weeks, or even months. 3 hours is fleeting in the extreme. It came and went so fast it was not even given an official number, says Hathaway. The astronomers who number sunspots did not think it worthy. Kind of like stripping Pluto of its planetary status. Second, the latitude of the spot is somewhat suspicious. News cycle sunspots almost always pop up in mid-latitudes around 30 degrees north, 30 degrees south in that area. The backward sunspot is, was actually, for a short time, at 13 south. That's very strange. The oddism stopped Hathaway short of declaring the onset of a new solar cycle, but he says it looks promising. Even if cycle 24 truly has begun, don't expect any great storms right away. Solar cycles last 11 years, take time to build up to a fever pitch for a while, perhaps 1 or 2 years. Cycle 23 and 4 will actually share the sun, making a hodgepodge of backward and forward spots. Eventually, cycle 24 will take over completely, and then the fireworks begin. You never know what you're going to get digging through the U.S. patent files, and it has been discovered that Samsung has filed one of their own in hopes of using, now get this, folks, of using the atmosphere as an antenna. Researchers and employees in Korea are devising a method to use the ionosphere, the layer of atmosphere around 50 kilometers above the Earth's surface, as a medium for long-distance communication without the need for expensive satellites. Now, of course, the ionosphere already plays a role in communications as a radio reflector. It bounces low-frequency radio signals from sea to shining sea, but by launching UHF signals behind a 1 gigahertz carrier signal, scientists are thinking they can alter the behavior of the ionosphere to create an alternating current, which then can be modulated at a particular frequency in order to create an antenna of global proportions. While the precise utility of such a thing is not yet clear, it's interesting that it's in the works, apparently. Is Nessie real? She was once and could be again. Whether or not the huge creature known as the Loch Ness Monster is a living dinosaur, we do know that millions of years ago, huge carnivorous reptiles resembling Nessie lived in Australia. If the current Nessie is not real, we may soon be able to recreate her. Now, what do you think of that idea? A scientific breakthrough in DNA is going to make it possible for creatures that have been extinct for, well, since the Ice Age, about 30,000 years ago, to roam the Earth again. Like Nessie does now? Question mark. This comes from Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country. BBC News quotes researcher Australian Benjamin Keir as saying, imagine a compact body with four flippers, a reasonably long neck, small head, short tail, much like a reptilian seal. This creature grew to be around 16 feet long, had incredibly sharp teeth, so maybe we should hope that today's Nessie is a myth. Mark Henderson writes in the London Times that the woolly mammoth, which had been extinct for a much shorter time, around 30,000 years, could roam the Earth once more if DNA researchers can use frozen sperm, yes, they have frozen sperm found inside a long-dead mammoth, to produce offspring in surrogate mother animals. Maybe the Loch Ness Monster is a similar situation that somehow happened naturally. What do you think? Should we bring something like that back? Or how about this for a headline? Blood-sucking chupacabra goes on rampage in Russian villages, many of which I'm going to have a hard time pronouncing. In Russia, the first evidence has appeared of a half-mythical creature, which apparently sucks blood from animals, even large ones. Abroad, it is known under the name chupacabra. No one knows for certain what it looks like, but in 2005, a farmer in Texas caught in a trap, something looking very much like a cross between a bald dog, a rat, and a kangaroo, which apparently was sucking blood out of his chickens and turkeys, and now a mystery bloodsucker has appeared around Orenburg. The worries began at the end of March 2005, not far from the regional center, where they lost 32 turkeys. The bodies of the birds found in the morning had been completely drained of blood. None of the farmers either heard or saw the beast that killed them. Then in the village of Grabvolkia, sheep fell victim to a nighttime vampire. Now that's getting bigger. The unknown animal was also in the hamlets of Vladikinsha and Shurma, In the course of the night, 3 to 4 sheep or goats perished. Altogether, the losses in the region amounted to 30 small horned cattle. So there have been any number of witnesses to this. Any number of farmers have seen this bloodsucker, and it may well be that the now infamous chupacabra has indeed made another showing. If we can ever identify the genetic and psychological traits that make people criminals, especially killers, we may be able to lock them away before they kill again, or kill even the first time. This theme was explored several years ago in the film Remember Minority Report? Now it is apparently becoming real. In the West, courts have always incarcerated people according to the severity of their crimes, rather than on the likelihood of committing future offenses, even though every policeman and judge will say they can spot an offender who will commit more crimes in the future. The parole system uses a series of judgments based on judicial experience in order to decide who should be let out of prison early. It starts with the death penalty. This type of assessment can spell the difference between a death sentence and life spent in prison. It seems as though about 5% of all those who commit crimes continually, in other words, that is the about 70%, frankly, of all crimes are committed by about 5% of the people, and now they're beginning to get a genetic handle on it all. Man-made global warming leads to higher ocean surface temperatures, which in turn creates more and stronger hurricanes, as well as other so-called natural disasters like forest fires, droughts, and floods. The BBC News is reporting, notice we always have to get this from the BBC, that climatologists say that global warming will increase the risk of forest fires, droughts, and floods over the next 200 years, even if we cut greenhouse gas emissions right now. So I suppose I would add to the argument that would say, what the hell, it's too late anyway. Hurricanes are getting stronger, as you know, more frequent. Global warming warms the surface of the ocean, feeding the storms, which then in turn cause devastation, rather, when they move inland. But this is, actual ocean surface temperature a result of natural changes or greenhouse gases or both? They now apparently think both. Scientists think they have now found a gene, speaking of genes, that helped the human brain evolve, or did help it, from our chimp-like ancestors in just a very few million years. One area of the human genome seems to have evolved about 70 times faster than the rest of our genetic code. It appears to have a role in a rapid tripling of the size of the brain's crucial cerebral cortex, according to an article being published in the very famous journal Nature, looking at 49 areas that have changed the most between the human and chimpanzee genomes. They have found a dramatic change in a relatively short period of time in one area. That one gene did not exist until, get this, 300 million years ago and is present only in mammals and birds. But then, after that, it did not change much at all. And then finally, this for you, entitled Lizard Birthing. If you have raised kids, or ever been one, and gone through the pet syndrome, including, of course, toilet flush burials for dead goldfish, the story below is going to have you laughing and possibly on the floor. Overview. I had to take my son's lizard to the vet. Here's what happened. Just after dinner one night, my son came to tell me that there was something wrong with one of the two lizards that he holds prisoner in his room. He's just lying there and looking sick, he told me. I'm serious, Dad. Can you help? Well, I put on my best lizard healer statement on my face, followed him into his bedroom. One of the little lizards was indeed lying on his back, looking stressed. I immediately knew what to do. Honey, I called, come look at the lizard. Oh my gosh, my wife diagnosed after just a moment, she's having babies. What? My son demanded. Their names are Bert and Ernie, Mom. I was equally outraged. Hey, how can that be? I thought we said we didn't want them to reproduce, I accused my wife. Well, what do you want me to do? Post a sign on their cage? She inquired. I actually think she said this rather sarcastically. No, but you were supposed to get two boys, I reminded her in my most loving, calm, sweet voice while getting my teeth together and gritting. Yeah, Bert and Ernie, my son agreed. Well, it's just a little hard to tell on some guys, you know, she informed me again with the sarcasm, you think? By now, the rest of the family had gathered to see what was going on. I shrugged, deciding to make the best of it. Kids, this is going to be a wondrous experience, I announced. We're about to witness the miracle of birth. Oh, gross, they shrieked. Well, isn't that just great? What are we going to do with a litter of tiny little lizard babies? My wife wanted to know. I really do think she was being snotty here, don't you? We peered at the patient. After much struggling, what looked like a tiny foot would briefly appear, vanishing a scant second later. I noted we don't appear to be making much progress. It's breech, my wife whispered, horrified. "Do something, Dad," my son urged. "Okay, okay." Squeamishly, I reached in and grabbed the foot when it next appeared. Giving it a gentle tug, it disappeared. I tried several more times with the same result. "Should I call 911? My eldest daughter wanted to know. Maybe they could talk us through the trauma. You see a pattern here with the females in my house?" "Let's get Ernie to the vet," I said grimly. We drove to the vet with my son holding the cage in his lap. "Breathe, Ernie, breathe," he urged. "I don't think lizards do lamas," his mother noted to him. "Women can be so cruel to their young. I mean, what she does to me is one thing, but this boy is of her womb, for God's sakes." The vet took Ernie back to the examining room, peered at the little animal through a magnifying glass. "What do you think, Doc? A C-section?" I suggested scientifically. "Oh, very interesting," he murmured. "Mr. and Mrs. Cameron, may I speak to you privately for a moment?" I gulped, nodding for my son to step aside. "Step outside for just a moment, son." "Is Ernie going to be okay?" my wife asked. "Oh, perfectly," the vet assured us. "This lizard is not in labor. In fact, that isn't ever going to happen. You see, Ernie is a boy. Ernie is a young male, you see, and occasionally, as they come into maturity, like most male species, they masturbate. Just the way he did. Lying on his back, he blushed, glancing at my wife. Oh, you know what I'm saying, Mrs. Cameron? We were silent, absorbing all of this. So Ernie's just excited," my wife offered. "Exactly," the vet replied, relieved that we understood. More silence. Then my vicious, cruel wife started to giggle and giggle, then laugh loudly. "What's so damn funny?" I demanded, knowing but not believing that the woman I married would commit the upcoming affront to my flawless manliness. Tears now running down her face, laughing as just a...
And then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and they use them to help us to find.
Take a ride. To talk to Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at 818-501-4109. The first time caller line is 818-501-4721. To talk toll free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, toll free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling their in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5 and dialing toll-free 1-800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM. Now, from Manila, Philippines, here is Art Bell.
Actually, the other side of the world. In a moment, we will go to open lines, so if you've got something you want to get on the air, something really interesting, grab one and join us to finish up the lizard story, mercifully cut off by that commercial break, with the wife simply laughing hysterically. The husband announced, "That's enough, that's enough." We thanked the vet and hurriedly bundled the lizards and our son back into the car. And he was glad that everything was going to be okay. He said, "I know Ernie's really thankful for what you've done, Dad," he told me. Oh, you have no idea, at which point the wife once again collapsed with laughter. Moral of the story, two lizards, $140. One cage, $50. Trip to the vet, $30. Memory of your husband pulling on a lizard's winky, priceless. Moral of the story, finished biology class. Lizards lay eggs. All right, as advertised, we're about to plunge into open lines. I want to remind you that next weekend I have petitioned for a night of open lines. Now, you may want to take the week to prepare the stories that I'm looking for. I'm going to be looking for stories of people who have experienced another dimension. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean consciously experienced another dimension. I understand that many have had sleep experiences in which they think they've experienced another dimension, but we're going to skip over that one and hopefully not get people who call up and say, well, you know, I had a dream. I am convinced, as are, by the way, most modern theoretical physicists, that there are as many as 11, if not more, additional dimensions out there than ours. And so obviously, from time to time, if you believe half the stories or a quarter of the stories that we get here, people have visited briefly on occasion or perhaps at some length other dimensions. And I would like those stories, and we'll be soliciting those stories during an open line segment next week, as well as whatever else you would like to talk about. So anybody who feels they have actually, for a short or long time, consciously experienced another dimension, we're going to be looking for you on one of the days of next weekend. In the meantime, east of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art. A pleasure to talk with you.
And with you, sir.
A long time ago, in a loser's paradise, folks looked down at their tiny television sets and concluded that the grass really is greener on the other side, and they tore down the Berlin Wall. With your electronic experience and broadcast genius, could you come up with some modern thing, a video phone or whatever, that would essentially trigger the Islamic Renaissance that's been delayed by, you know, 1,000 years? Start in Mindanao by sending them some kind of kits. You know, we could give everybody $1,000 device compared to what we're doing right now and the feudal expense.
I wish what you suggest would be possible. I wish that there was some way of changing the minds and the hearts of those who want us dead. He mentioned Mindanao down to, it's one of the southernmost islands of the Philippine chain, and there is indeed activity going on down there and has been for years now. And of course, Islamic radical activity going on in many, many parts of the world. Can we change those minds and hearts? I don't think so. I think this is one of those things where these folks either want us converted, and they've pretty well given up on that concept, or they want us dead. Now, when you get to the point where somebody wants you to believe as they believe or die, then I guess you've got a situation where you're at war whether you like it or not. And the answer, of course, is not. We don't like it. But believing as we do, as Americans do, and loving freedom as we do, I think this is one war that is absolutely, completely unavoidable. You're not going to change those hearts and those minds through all the video conferences or things that you might send. And so you're going to have to fight this war. The West is going to have to eventually, and I'm sure it will, make up its mind that, and to some degree already has, we just don't advertise it, that we are going to fight that war. And we're certainly not going to convert, are we? West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
It's West of the Rockies?
It is.
Hi, Art. This is Mike. Nice talking to you again.
Hey,
I'm assuming that you played the exorcism tape about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Remember?
Okay. Yeah, I do.
I just thought I was praying on a prayer line for a certain ministry one time, and this is an exorcism on an animal.
No, don't play it for me.
No. I haven't.
Okay. Is it an exorcism for an animal?
Yeah, she had donated some money to the ministry, and ever since that day, her little dog had been sick, you know. And she told me, she said, "I know it's the devil." I said, "Well, it could be." I said, "Let me pray." And I started praying. I said, "Is he in the room?" She said, "Yes." I said, after I prayed, I said, "What's he doing?" She said, "He's shaking violently." I said, "Okay." I said, "I'm going to pray again." So I started the exorcism. And then after I was done, I said, "What's he doing now?" She said, "He got up. He walked over to me. His tail is wagging. He sat down, and he has tears in his eyes." I said, "Take him for a walk because he's free."
So there you have it, the story of a freed pooch, I guess. Can the devil inhabit an animal, a dog? Well, I suppose so, if one is given to believe that animals might have souls, and I'm certainly given to believe that, then I guess I would have to believe that they could potentially be inhabited by an evil force, I guess. A first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
My entire life, I have experienced shadow people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure, like, I haven't really listened to any of your broadcast shadow people or anything, so, like, what exactly are they?
If I knew that, I wouldn't be doing shows on them, I suppose. I have no idea what they are. They're probably spirits or souls, or perhaps even aliens, and they're probably operating on another dimensional frequency, one that we rarely see. There are people like yourself who claim to see them almost constantly, but that's pretty rare. So we don't know what they are, dear. Sorry if that stops you cold, but we don't know. Well, I guess she just went away. I'm sorry I couldn't give you a better answer than that, but obviously that's one of the things that we explore on this program, and that was the best description I'm able to give. These are creatures or spirits that are seen, usually, as I mentioned yesterday, in peripheral vision, occasionally straight on by people like that young lady who just called and was too shy to go beyond that. But we don't know. The answer is, we don't know what they are. Wildcard Line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Orlando.
Yes.
Are you still interested in pirates?
Pirates?
Yeah, you were interested a few years ago. I'm a treasure hunter.
Uh-huh.
And I've got your address over in Pahrump, but obviously you've moved.
A mile or two, yeah.
The stuff. When I've got the stuff, I've got the stuff, but I don't think it's going to make it all the way to Manila.
Well, when you say you've got the stuff, what specifically is the stuff?
I've been excavating an old pirate ship sunk off here off the Florida off Florida Keys.
Were these pirates who had done well?
Well, they'd done well supposedly until the U.S. Navy caught up with them in 1834.
I see, and obviously sunk them. No, but the question was really. Was the ship filled with booty?
Yes.
So the stuff you refer to is gold and jewels and that sort of thing?
Yeah, a few coins. Not that I haven't found any jewels on coins. We're still looking for the jewels, trust me.
I'm sure you are. Much like the gold that never reached me, from Ed Dames, I don't know what to say, but if you feel so inclined to send some coins and or jewels when you come across them along my way, just send them to the network and they'll forward them on or not.
Is your house still exist over in your address still exists over in Pahrump?
Yes, of course it does. Yes.
Okay, can I send it there?
I see no reason why not. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure, 'cause you never talk
all right.
About
all right. Thank
anymore.
You. And Why don't I talk about, well, when pirates come up, I'll talk about them. I guess there hasn't been a lot of pirate news lately. Actually, I think the last pirate story ended rather grimly for the pirates. I think it was off the coast of Africa, and if I recall correctly, a U.S. naval vessel put them down to Davy Jones' locker rather quickly. Wildcard Line, you are on the air. Hello.
How you doing, Art? This is Joe. I'm in Ohio.
Yes, sir.
And I want to tell you about a ghost cat story.
A ghost cat story, okay.
Yeah, me and my wife, we was out checking out some hauntings one night, and we came back to the motel, and I laid down before she did and everything, and she said we had cats with us, and she put them in the cage for the night, and I was sleeping, while I was sleeping, I felt the presence of a cat kneading on me, and I asked her the next morning, and she said she put the cat, in the cage right after I went to bed. And the next night, it happened to her. The cat was meowing in her face. The ghost cat.
Yeah, and obviously there was no real cat there, right?
There was nothing there.
Okay, well, what you have just described actually is awfully common. I'm convinced that animals do come back in spirit. I have a cat, Yeti. My Yeti crawls into bed with me just about nightly. And crawls under the covers and kneads my stomach until Yeti is satisfied. I'm sure that it goes back to kittyhood. And I'm not sure what it is, but I can tell you this, that it satisfies him tremendously. After he has kneaded my stomach for the appointed amount of time, sometimes it takes two or three sessions before he's satisfied, he's purring. And he's kind of off in another little world for a while. In fact, he's sort of confused. As he slowly comes out of the covers, I'm forced to kind of hold him on my chest for a while, and he just sort of lays there in kind of a state of contented confusion. And then eventually he'll realize, sort of shake himself and realize it's the real world, and will then crawl off to his little soft appointed bed over in the corner. But he really needs that. It means an awful lot to him. And I've always seen to it that he gets it when he needs it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art Bell.
Yes, hello.
I've been abducted by aliens.
How long ago?
I can't remember.
You cannot remember?
I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago.
2 or 3 years ago. And do you recall what they did?
They took me while I was asleep, and I woke up in their ship, and they started talking. And they said,
do you recall what they said to you?
I asked them, did they mean any harm? They said, no, they didn't. And then they put a probe up my nose.
Up your nose?
Yes.
That's the sort of story that really puts the a very bad light on aliens indeed. I've never been a fan of probes in the nose, or any other orifice for that matter. And it also tends to make me not think they're the warm little fuzzy creatures that everybody thinks they are. What do you think? I'd give it about a 50-50 possibility that they're the warm, fuzzy little creatures depicted in so many science fiction movies. I rather think not. Well, let's see. Let's go to the first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hello. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know if I was on. I listen to your program all the time, and I think it's real good.
Well, it's very different.
I had a positive experience. Was it a real bad car wreck?
Yes, sir.
And I was on the operating table, and they say my heart stopped. I left my body. I come out through the back of my body, and I was above the operating table, and I could see the doctors working, and I could see the nurses, and I kept going up, and I went up through the ceiling, and I started going up above it, and the hospital started getting smaller and smaller, and I went up further in the sky, and the state started getting smaller and smaller, and pretty soon I could see the continent getting smaller.
May I ask you a question? Were you fully conscious during this experience? In other words, were you saying to yourself, my God, I probably just died, and I'm rising above a hospital, and here I am rising now above the earth? I mean, were you thinking those things as it was occurring?
Yes, sir. In fact, I was kind of scared at first, and then I could look at my body, and I had multicolored, like electrical charges all over me. And as I was floating, going up, I had a knowledge of everything. It seemed like I had some kind of a universal knowledge of everything, of creation, of electromagnetic, of anything that I could think of, I had an answer for.
Yes, sir.
And I kept going, and I left the planet, and it started getting smaller, and I was floating out in darkness. I was going by these colored lights. They're like rungs of light. They're round, and they were horizontal. And on the ends were like stars. And then they had lights that went back to the horizon that looked like railroad tracks going way back in the distance. Mm-hmm. And as I passed by each one of these rungs of lights, it was making the most prettiest music I ever heard. And I went beyond them lights, and I was still going. And I started seeing dark shapes and shadows and things. I started getting scared. So I started praying real hard. And all of a sudden, there was an explosion of colored lights. And I was standing in this field of multicolored flowers. And they were like rainbow colors. Some had more colors than others, and you could distinguish them apart. The sky was white. And the best way I could describe that was like looking through your eyelash in the sunlight, and you could see rainbow colors.
Sure.
And while I was standing there, I heard a voice, and I believe the sky that was white was God, and he was talking to me. And he told me, it's your time, my son. And I said, Father, it's not fair. I've had such a rough childhood, and I've had a rough life. And I prayed and asked you to bring me a wife, and you brought me a wife, and now you want to take me away from her. And he says, if you go back and you tell people the second coming is at hand, I'll let you live. And I said, yes, Father. The next thing I know, I hit the top of my head, and I filled my body up, and I was back in my body again.
And that accounts for why you're now on an international show telling us this story, because you're required to talk about the second coming. How soon do you feel it may occur?
Well, this was done about 30 years ago. But time really is nothing to God, you know.
So I've heard. Yes.
I believe it
could be any time.
Things are going in the Middle East and everything's going on. It's got to be soon.
It could be soon, sir. There's no question about it. It is said no man shall know the time, so I'm surprised he indicated to you that the time was nigh. At any rate, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Freddy Solva is going to be here. Now, Freddy Solva abandoned a rather lucrative career to begin a study of crop circles, one of the greatest mysteries of our time. He's quite knowledgeable in the field, and anybody who gives up a lot of money to study something like crop circles deserves a listening. He's coming up next. This is Coast to Coast AM.